Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
Even though there was times when we had no money, no electricity, being thrown out of our homes at times, it was hard. But we didn't see that because they never allowed us to see that.
In her mid-30s, Mary was a single mum when she had to face the death of her own mother.
It took me down a completely dark road. I turned to drink then. Whatever chance I got, I went out for a drink. My dad wasn't well at the time either. And then in 2004, when Daddy passed, it was the food I turned to then. And before I knew it, I was the size I am and just couldn't break away from it. Couldn't. I don't think anybody ever really stops missing those people that loved you and brought you into the world. And
that's Operation Transformation. It's running on Wednesdays, 9:35 on RTE1. James Dempsey joins us once again. This is the umpteenth series of this thing.
Yeah, I think it's the second celebrity version. And I think it is as much as the ninth, the ninth one. It's been running on RTE since 2008, which is a long time for any kind of show like this. Because when I sat down to watch it, and I would not be a regular viewer of Operation Transformation, but I have to acknowledge it does have this big sort of pop cultural moment in Irish media whenever it takes place, because it is such a big project for RTE, because it is, a big cross-stream thing. They do it not only on TV with the weekly show, but they do it on radio and they do it online as well. So it takes up a big proportion of their time budget, we'll say, at the moment. So it's hard to ignore it. Now, what I will say when you sit down and watch it is there's a certain sameness to it. I mean, as in, I don't know if I'm getting anything particularly new out of this, cohort of celebrities that I didn't get in the last group when they were on, which had, a similar type of profile, overweight famous people who want to lose a bit of weight. And then you get this a second time around. So I'm not sure if I'm getting anything new. I mean, what lessons do we learn? We learn that people need to be more active. They need to consume less alcohol. They need to have better diet. That's it.
Yeah.
So I don't, we're not reinventing the wheel with each subsequent series of Operation Transformation. What I think works to its advantage, at least in the celebrity version, I suppose in the pleb version, in the normal everyday version of it, it's more aspirational because it is everyday people living everyday lives, right? So in the celebrity one, what we hear a lot is that they're so busy, they're so busy running to and fro all these events that they just, can't have disciplined in the sense of diet, lifestyle. They pick up canapes, they swig back glasses of champagne. Sean, you rub shoulders with these
people. That's my life, yeah.
So I suppose what you gain with the regular one is aspirational viewing. If you are at home feeling that you're not happy with your weight or your body, that these are people going through a similar position in life as you, so that's something you can emulate. Mm. And the whole point is you follow their journey online on the website, you follow their diet plan, you follow their exercise regime. With the celebrities, it's exactly the same. You can follow their diet, you can follow their exercise regime. But what carries it is that the reason why these people are famous is they have either some kind of talent or, in lieu of talent, a lot of charm.
Yeah.
And I will say they make for a very nice group. So you have Mary Byrne of X Factor fame. I mean, it's actually it's a good few years since Mary Byrne was on the X Factor, but she still is just a very likable, ordinary, Tesco woman who made it big on the telly.
Yeah.
And she is just very likable. And she's interesting because she has admitted to being, she's admitted to depression in the past and talks about it in the show, and is a hoarder as well. So her house is just like chock-a-block with stuff, and talks about hoarding and her family life as well. So then you have Gary O'Hanlon, who's a chef. Trina McCarthy.
He's from the restaurant.
Rubbed shoulders. So you get his family life. You get Trina McCarthy, who's a beauty journalist for the Indo, and a lot about her family and how she sort of met her husband, I think, slightly later, not very later, but as in had young children in her 40s, and how that has affected her. Kaylee Cullinan, who I have to admit I was not familiar with at all, but who had the most heartbreaking, I suppose, sob story in the sob stories, of which there are plenty. I mean, this is that kind of show. She's a singer who appeared on The Voice, and she'd been bullied very badly when she was a teenager and beaten by her bullies to the point that her retina detached. And as far as my understanding, has never been successfully reattached. So her story is very sad, and she's the heaviest and the youngest. So there's an extra you know, for want of a better word, weight to her story that, yeah, you know, you don't get with the others. And then James Patrice, who I'm not sure if you're familiar with, he is a social media darling of the Irish social media scene. He is big on Snapchat, big on Twitter, big on Instagram, and big on RTE too, where they sort of put him out on all the kind of loads of different presenting gigs. So he has two different types of scoliosis, which is his... his sob story. But he, when I say sob story flippantly, I shouldn't.
Look. Yeah, because it seems like they choose people on the basis of, it's not just that they've eaten too many pies, that there's some other factor to being overweight.
Very much so. And look, I mean, you and I are both sitting in this room. You and I are both quite svelte men, so it is difficult for us to get in the mind frame of someone in this position. And watching a show like this raises a lot of interesting questions about how heavier people get commodified on TV as just different. Like, there's a ton of weight loss shows. I mean, the most famous one being The Biggest Loser, which ran in the US, I think, for 12 years. And it is very, it's really infamous because the show pushes these heavy people to diet to such an extreme regime that they almost develop like an eating disorder in the opposite direction, that they go from one extreme to losing more weight than is healthy in a very short period of time. And all reports that revisit people that have been previously on the show see that they just pile it back on again. So there's a lot going on at the moment with this thing, which my understanding is called grossophobia, which is this societal fear of heavier people. And there's many books being written about it, like Roxane Gay, the very famous American feminist and writer. She has a book called Hunger, which is all about her wanting to gain weight because she'd been very brutally attacked as a younger woman, and she thought that this would be a way out of that ever happening again. And I'm not saying that's how you get a celebrity operation transformation, but there is a very interesting discussion to be had about how heavy people are portrayed in media in general, as much as thin people are commodified as well. But it just is very interesting to watch these kind of shows and see how we treat people and how we just look at them as a kind of grotesque thing. Like, I'm always so struck with Operation Transformation about when they go to have the weigh-in, I don't understand why they make the men take off their shirts. You know, they have to stand there in a pair of underwear. Like, for what? To what end? I mean,
it makes them look very vulnerable.
It does make them look very vulnerable because they are very vulnerable. And then the panel of advisors and experts, they give their advice, but often it is very cutting and cruel. And yeah, sometimes I guess tough love is what you need. I understand that, but sometimes you just kind of think, just be nice. They are as vulnerable as they be. I mean, would you want to stand in front of people in your underwear on national TV?
Well, no. Is it cast in that way in terms of the expert advisors? Because Dr. Eva Orsman was traditionally the mean one.
She's not there anymore. Keira Kelly is there, of this parish, we'll say. I think they're all a bit mean.
Okay.
So you have, who do you have? You have Catherine Thomas, anyway, is the presenter. She's nice to everybody. She tells everyone they're legends all the time. You've Keira Kelly, who gives out to you for everything from drinking, basically, and anything like that. Carl Henry is the fitness expert. He will be fairly tough as well and give out to them for not, you know, trying hard enough, stuff like that. Dr. Eddie Murphy is the psychologist based on, admittedly, I've only seen one episode of this series. I'm not 100% sure what he brings to the panel yet. I presume he will appear more later on in the series. So that's my thoughts on that. And then Eva Hearn is the dietitian who gives and publishes on the website their dietary plan for the week, I suppose, or the 30 days that they go through the process. They're all mean. I mean, they're all, you know, I was kind of watching this and comparing it to other sort of reality competition shows, which isn't a like for like comparison because this, you know, this isn't a reality competition show. It's a lifestyle transformation show. But you see shows where judging takes place, and good judging is invaluable because it sets, you know, it sets the framework for everyone at home to see how people are actually performing. But also it's really entertaining. And this, with the panel of advisors, I don't think you actually get to see what they're doing in the background to advise the people. I mean, you follow the leaders, as all of the participants are known. You follow their story throughout the week, which sees them, you know, walking up and down stairs, lifting bottles of water, pushing a trolley around a supermarket going, what's an aubergine? But really, what you wanted, you know, I think it'd be more instrumental at home as a viewer to have, we'll say, you know, dietitian Aoife Hearn coming in for a 30-second talking head saying, don't eat this because of X, eat this instead, replace this with this. And probably you do get that online if you go, if you want to do the extra effort to seek out, you know, on the website. But I'm lazy, like everyone else. So I would like it pushed into my, you know, viewing.
Yeah, but I suppose the function of the TV show is, you know, is to do a degree to be educational and blah, blah. But, you know, they have to give some degree of jeopardy and drama and tears.
Yeah,
and
it has to be. Yeah, of course. This is like, it's the smoke and mirrors of TV as well. Yeah. So when they go in for their weigh-in, do you think Gather Thomas immediately spits out exactly what they've lost? No, it's stretched out. It's like, you were 17 stone and 9 pounds and now you are
23 stone.
I don't think that. Yeah.
I suppose, did you care enough to want to go back?
Yes and no. The funny thing was, I was actually watching the show while making two different cakes. Which is probably...
That's cruel, James.
Which is probably not the ideal viewing model, but I had a task that I had to do. I cared because I did find each of the leaders charming and nice in their own way. Mm. I found them. I found their sob stories, which again, I don't want to sound too flippant. I did find their lifestyles interesting. I found what they'd gone through at times harrowing, and certainly I was very sympathetic towards it. And I found their desire to change their lifestyle, genuine. What I also found is that in some ways, I felt they were kind of hoodwinked into presenting themselves in a sort of caricature. Like, for example, Trina McCarthy, the beauty journalist from the Indo, she says she loves chocolate and she's going around the supermarket and there's no chocolate on her diet. So the producers, I'm going to assume, have her ring Aoife, the dietitian, say, oh, can I just have a bar? Can I just have a piece of chocolate? And there's this whole thing about chocolate. Mm. And in the end, she's given permission to eat a square of chocolate. And then she goes for the weigh-in and they completely and utterly hold her to task for eating a square of chocolate, despite the fact they've already given her permission to eat a square of chocolate.
Yeah. So it's kind of no win there. Right. Well, as we say, that's on Wednesdays at 9:30 on RT1. Couple of bits of TV news. The iPhone 10. People will know has just been launched or is about to be launched or whatever. And Black Mirror, the TV show, is taking credit for some aspect of it.
Yeah, so Black Mirror, as we know, you know, the Charlie Brooker TV show, comes from the title. Black Mirror is like the black screen of a phone or a tablet or a laptop or a TV or something like that. And in one of the episodes in the second season of the show, something to do with Waldo, I have it written down. Anyway, the Waldo moment. In this episode, an animated blue face runs for political office in the UK, runs as an MP and becomes sort of a cause célèbre and a champion of the people. And as it's Black Mirror, it all ends terribly and technology is evil. But in the launch on Tuesday, for Apple Day, announced that they were going to have these animated emojis for the first time. So you'll be able to sort of film your face, because they've got this new face camera thing, and it animates the emoji to repeat exactly what you said and your facial figures and so on and so forth. So Charlie Brooker then basically posted a tweet in which he included the animated emojis with Waldo thrown in amongst them, saying, look what we pre-saw before anyone else.
Yeah, and there's been a scientific study on binge watching.
Yeah, now all scientific studies you have to take with a pinch of salt, and this one only had 51 participants, which is not enough. But it came from the University of Melbourne, and it said what it did was it had a group of students against a control group watch a 6-hour BBC drama. I can't remember what it was called, but it was about the Cold War. And they had one group binge watch it and one group watch it sort of on a week by week basis. And what they discovered was that although binge watching is very much the model of how we view things now, and most people would probably binge watch 2 to 3 episodes of something before moving on to another thing, it is not conducive for enjoyable TV viewing. So they found that when they polled people, that they enjoyed it more when they had it on a sort of drip feed week by week basis. And not only that, they tested them twice. They tested them on memory of the plot 24 hours after they'd watched it, and then 140 days after they'd watched it. And they found that amongst people who'd binge watch it, the memory was great after 24 hours, but it saw a massive drop off at the 140 day mark. And that is important because, well, I mean, it's not important, but it's of note, I suppose, because, you know, if you binge watch a show like House of Cards and then let's say you watch all 13 episodes in a day, which many people have done, you know, 365 days later when season two comes along, can you remember any of what's going on?
Not
Who's
at
that?
All.
What's yeah. the relationship? I can't remember that. So that they're saying that it's not conducive to sort of good memory, basically.
Isn't that just the gap? I watched the first six series of Game of Thrones because it was kind of catching up, like continuing. Well, now it was maybe one episode a night, but it was fairly continuous. And then, you know, we got to the end of series six, and then there was a big wait for series seven. So that when series seven came out, like, I turned into my mother. I was going, who's he now? What's going on? I don't understand. Is he still alive? I don't understand this at all. I'm still baffled by half of it, but I think that was just the gap. Right, okay, we do have to take a break. The fourth season of a show, as I recall, James really loved, BoJack Horseman. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes.
What is this place?
This is where you live now.
No. Is it? No.
Mom.
Where are we, BoJack?
I just told you.
I don't understand. Where am I?
You're in Michigan.
Michigan?
Yeah. At the lake house.
I am?
And it's a warm summer night, and the fireflies are dancing in the sky, and your whole family is here, and they're telling you that everything is going to be all right.
Yes, that's right. What are we doing here, BoJack?
We're sitting on the back porch, and we're listening to your brother play the piano. And we're eating ice cream. Vanilla ice cream.
Yes, that's right. Oh, it's all so marvelous.
There you go, that's BoJack Horseman. You can binge watch it on Netflix now. That's season four. A couple of comments in on that already. Someone says they've never been able to get through the first season of it. Everyone at work is talking about it. I don't think I can give it a chance. I want to give it a chance, but I don't think I can. Though somebody else says we are in a golden age of animation for adults. There was a rocky start with some of Seth MacFarlane's work, but BoJack, along with Rick and Morty, is keeping me happy for some dark and mature cartoons. You'd probably be in the latter camp.
I am in the latter camp, but with shades of the former as well, because I started BoJack when it first came out, you know, which was, I guess, 3 years ago at this point. And I will say the first season, it's not bad, but it's not inspiring. It's, you know, it's fine. It's just run of the mill. It tells the story of BoJack Horseman, who is a, you know, talking horse.
Of course.
Who lives in Hollywood, which later becomes Hollywoo when the D falls off the Hollywood sign, and then they just keep going with that. And he is a former faded sort of early 90s sitcom star. He was the star of a sitcom called Horsin' Around, where he adopted this moppet of kids. And he's this millionaire actor, completely and utter disaffected with his life and miserable. And that is not something we haven't seen before. You know, this kind of melancholy anti-hero, you know, alcoholic, miserable millionaire, we've had a million times. Where the show really comes into its own is it has these moments of just utter absurdity, because, you know, a lot of it does involve walking, talking animals.
Yes.
So there's loads and loads of puns. Like, just to give you an example, this week, or in the first episode, I think, of this season, the fashion designer Marc Jacobs plays a version of himself who is Shark Jacobs.
Yeah.
And they just, I mean, they really, like, ring out these bizarrely silly puns. Mm. And it's very funny. Now, you do regrettably have to watch it in order, because it is sort of a, you know, a series arc TV show following a continuous plot, even though it is a cartoon and it is just utter silliness. You do regrettably then have to work your way through the first season. And I will say, right, that's about eight episodes of about 20 to 25 minutes length that are not bad. So as homework goes, right, it's not the worst assignment you're ever going to get. But it is utterly worthwhile to do so, because by the time you reach the end of the first season, it really begins to take off. The second season is sublime. Second season is a masterpiece, in my opinion. Third season, also really, really strong, with arguably one of the best animated episodes you'll ever see, which is entirely silent. I mean, it's a silent movie. Mm. It takes place underwater.
Of course,
and then
yes.
This fourth season hasn't quite, for me, hit the peaks of seasons two and three, but still is incredibly enjoyable. I mean, the clip we heard there, right, that wasn't like laugh out loud, okay? That was BoJack talking to his mother, Beatrice, who is senile in her old age, and they have a very troubled relationship. But the I mean, just to give you an idea of how silly it is, right? BoJack in this season, and this isn't a spoiler because you find this out immediately anyway, he discovers that he has a grown-up daughter that he never knew existed. Her name is Hollyhock, but she was raised by a group of pansexual gay men. So her first surname is Hollyhock Mannheim Mannheim Guerrero Robinson Zilberschlag Schung Fonzarelli McQuack. So it just comes out with these moments of pure silliness and brilliantly creative visual puns. I think it has a lot of charm, and it just, it really grabs you with these funny jokes, but moments of absolute pathos as well, with excellent voice acting. I mean, Will Arnett, who people will know from, you know, Arrested Development, his voice is just sort of made for this kind of character, this kind of melancholy, miserable type. Mm. But he is able to deliver a line like nobody else. I mean, he just will have you laughing. The list of cameos, this is just this season, is very impressive as well. You have Sharon Horgan, Andre Brower, Lake Bell, Matthew Broderick, Jane Krakowski, Hannibal Buress, Jessica Biel, Mark Jacobs, Rami Malek, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Zach Braff, Felicity Huffman, Paul Giamatti. So they can attract big name talent because people love it. It has become a cult hit that I think is really breaking into a mainstream hit. And I just think I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
And the fact that, and again, it's all animals. So even by talking about it.
But it's
about
animals and human beings as well. Sorry. So they're all, I mean, it's weird. It's a bit weird, but of course just go with it.
But the fact that he's an actor who was successful and it's set in Hollywood. Is it a satire about
completely.
Hollywood?
Yeah, absolutely. The best kind of, I think, recurring joke they do is they'll have this recurring joke about him in another decade where he'll remember that time in the 80s that he'll be driving around in a car singing, oh, this is a typical 80s song, and like all the things in the background are typical 80s. And they've done this maybe three times, one in the 90s, one in the like early aughts, and everyone's got like, you know, the Rachel haircut or stuff like they play up on Hollywood completely. It is a ruthlessly mean and very vitriolic Hollywood satire as well. So I think it also definitely pays off to be, you know, pop culture literate when you're watching this, because I think the more you are into that kind of world of entertainment, the more you'll get out of it.
Right, we'll go on to our third show. This is back, I think the second episode went out last night at 10 p.m. on Channel 4. Here's a clip.
Can't believe Dad is gone. I mean, Dad. Best Dad. Gone.
Yes, Dad. My dad has gone. Look, I was just...
Go ahead, don't mind me. I was just remembering the wonderful times with Dad. Dear, sweet Dad.
Sorry, do I know you?
Andrew Donnelly. I'm your brother.
No, you're not.
1987, March the 15th to August the 6th. I was your foster brother.
Oh, right, you were... One of those. Yes, of course. I'm Stephen.
I know.
Of course.
There you go. That's back. It's Mitchell and Webb. It's, you know, it's Peep Show. It's got pedigree.
Not only is it like the stars of Peep Show, so it's created by a man named Simon Blackwell, who wrote several of the best known episodes of Peep Show as well. Mm. So he has form for writing for Mitchell and Webb. And he's also written The Thick of It and Veep as well. So he has a lot of comedy pedigree. For me, this was a prime example of sort of like a just good enough sitcom. I thought the major problem that it had for me was that we've seen Mitchell and Webb work together on 9 seasons of Peep Show, and that show established them as comedy stars in the UK. And I don't think the characters they're playing here are different enough from, you know, from Jeremy and...
Yeah.
What's his name? That's terrible.
The other one.
To really set them apart from that show. Like, David Mitchell is playing this, like, uptight, cranky, nerdy one with aspirations to do something more creative. And Webb is playing this loose cannon type who thinks he's able to do everything and can charm absolutely everybody. Which is exactly the characters they played in Peep Show. It doesn't have quite the same satirical bite of Peep Show, because with Peep Show you got the inner monologue as well, which was often so laceratingly cruel that it was just phenomenally entertaining. I thought, on the whole, I thought it was a perfectly... I think it's a perfectly good start to a show without being brilliant. I saw someone say, like, I read a review of it that said, you know, this has the chance to be up there with sort of Catastrophe or Fleabag or some of the other really brilliant and excelling shows. And I kind of thought, who's been dropping some money into your pocket? Because for me, it was a prime example of just good enough. You know, it's not trying too hard. It's sort of playing up Middle England sensibilities, which we've seen a million times before. Like, I mean, if I compare this to BoJack Horseman, BoJack Horseman does, as I said, it takes a well-worn, well-trod piece of, an idea, this miserable millionaire who's disaffected with his life and wants a better life. But it throws in these splashes of utter absurdity and colour and puns that it carries it along.
Mm.
For me, this takes a very well-worn idea, which is sort of a Middle England family and sibling rivalry. Where it is trying to up the ante a bit is that the concept is that Robert Webb's Andrew, he was a foster child for only a couple of months. And we learn through flashback more about sort of the past. But at the end of the day, it's really just about kind of, it's a comedy of manners set amidst the British middle class. And for me, it hasn't differentiated itself enough yet. It hasn't shown sort of real bite or insight or ruthlessness with the characters that I kind of was expecting from Mitchell and Webb's previous work.
Mm.
So I think it's funny and I think it could go some places, but so far, just so for me.
God, that's disappointing, given that I recorded two episodes of it already. Right, okay, James Dempsey, thanks a million for coming into it.
Moncrief. With Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? Gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
Back in a couple of minutes.